Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show. Welcome back to Your Career Podcast. If you ever feel stuck in your career, or you need a little clarity in order to manage your career moving forward, or you're looking for a new job, visit janejacksoncoach.com. I've plenty of free downloads for you and a lot of career management support that will help to set you well on your way.
This is Valerie Koo from the Australian Writers' Centre, and you're listening to Jane Jackson Careers.
Now, I have always had a soft spot for author mentors, and so you can imagine how thrilled I was when I got to meet Jane Turner. She has a fascinating story, and she says that she literally came out of nowhere as a washed-up public servant who was made redundant at the age of 52. Now, 3 years later, she has built a thriving business off the back of her first book that is appropriately called Thrive in Midlife. She takes her clients through a hero's journey that not only transforms them into published authors, but also transforms them into very powerful and grounded individuals who are ready to step up and take their place in the world. Jane is a gifted speaker, sought-after business consultant, NLP master practitioner, and a certified master coach, as well as being the author of Thrive in Midlife, Weight Loss in Midlife, and Mindset for Authors, How to Get Out of Procrastination, Perfectionism, and Self-Doubt. Jane is the brains behind the Power Writing Program, the Power Publicity Program, and the Power Writers Publishing Group. So let's welcome Jane to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jane. Two James today.
I know. I like interviewing James. We're very special people.
Hopefully we don't forget each other's name, for one thing.
No, but actually, I've had that many Janes on the show. It's really quite interesting. I have Jane Henderson, I've had Jane Copeland, now I've got Jane Turner, okay. I'm Jane Jackson. It's the Jane Show.
All right, lovely.
So Jane, before we launch into your amazing career as an author mentor, can we find out a little bit about your early days and what were your career aspirations when you were a little girl?
Okay. Well, look, I'm a Canberra girl. I was born into a family of public servants and I became a public servant. As a little girl, I don't actually remember having any career aspirations. There is a story that I will go into in the context of writing my first book that will put that into some perspective. As a little girl, I was the youngest of five, so I had a whole bunch of older siblings who were going into the public service. And I guess I just imagined myself going with a lunch off to go into an office to do a job. I never thought any further than that. And that was, in fact, how it did play out for me.
Mm. And so when you joined the public service, it's almost like it was ordained that you
indeed joined
the public service. Mm. What was your first role?
My first role was the least glamorous of all positions. I worked in the tax department, possibly the daggiest of all departments one could have worked in, and I pushed the mail trolley along. I delivered the mail on the desks of the important people. Mm. And I remember coming home to my dad one day, and of course my father came through the Depression. He was a man who saw a lot of adversity, and for him to have a job himself in the public service was security. And he wanted that for his kids. That was his highest value. So I came home one day and I said to him, Mum, I think I'm going to quit that job. It's awful. And it was as if I said I was going to cut off my left arm. He was mortified at the thought. And a little ways into the, I think I lasted 3 months in that job, Jane. And I did, in fact, then get another job in the aviation department, another job. I really bounced around for a while before coming up to Sydney, coming to the Big Smoke. And what did I do here, Jane? I got a job in the public service. I spent a number of years in the Commonwealth Employment Service, which was actually quite a fun job. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was the place where unemployed people would go, A, to sign up to get the dole, but also if they were looking for a job. It was a fairly healthy employment market back in the day. And, you know, we had jobs that we could refer people on to. So I just loved interacting with the people who came in, and I actually met my husband there. So that was another benefit of working in that particular scenario. But I then got quite lucky. Maybe I use that word. Maybe I am underestimating my skill at bureaucracy. Again, well, you know, one of the daggier things to boast about, but I certainly knew how to work my way around government departments by that time. And I got a job in the, what was then called the Australian Broadcasting Tribunal. So I spent a period of time there actually reading scripts for children's programming, and there were very strict rules about how much content, Australian content I should say, was being played in the children's television time slots. So I was there for a while until I got a great opportunity, and it was a quirky sort of a job really. The Rocks Visitor Centre was looking for somebody to work on a weekend. And I had been a little reckless with buying a property, I should say, with a friend of mine. And very fast after we bought that property, the interest rates sped up to 17%. And we got in a fairly deep hole. And I took that extra bit of work on the Saturday. Now, that actually gave me an opportunity to branch out into the tourism industry. And of course, is there a better place in a town like Sydney than the tourism industry? It was really quite exciting. And I actually rose up to the manager of that actual organisation at the time. And a wonderful opportunity came to the fore with Tourism New South Wales, who at the time had a visitor centre in Castlereagh Street. And for whatever reason, politically, they decided to close that centre down. When I heard about that happening, I hot-footed up the road to the main administration of Sydney Cove Authority. And I said to Bob Mitchell, who was the CEO at the time, I said, Bob, I see a gap in the market here, and it's a gap that we can fill. And he said, hang on a minute, though. How are you going to staff what you're talking about, taking our little precinct-based visitor centre into being Sydney's main visitor centre? And I said, how I'm going to staff that, Bob, is that I am going to tap into the government traineeship service, and Tourism New South Wales had been using those, you know, they were the bright sparks coming through the school system. Tourism New South Wales had trained a whole bunch up that were now not going to be needed anymore. And I said to Bob, we will bring those people into our purview, and when we do an agreement with Tourism New South Wales, that will be their responsibility to actually staff the centre for us. So there I was, able to build my profile in terms of being the person who set up Sydney in time for the Olympics to have a wonderful facility down in the Rocks. And the interesting part about it is that we were in the old sailors' home, so a very beautiful old building that had two levels of exhibition space. And the Sydney Cove Authority had ownership, or I should say custodianship, of over 1 million archaeological pieces. And there was one standard exhibition that was on in the upper levels of the building. And again, my head was ticking over, and I said, Bob, what if we were to change that exhibition around? There is so much rich material that we can use. And he said, well, again, how are you going to fund that? And I said to him, look, I can really bring people in who will be doing internships through the College of Fine Arts. And I actually had my eye on the College of Fine Arts because I wound up in the end being funded to go and do a master's degree there as the manager of the Sydney Visitor Centre, looking after those two levels of exhibition space. So off the back then of having a master's degree in arts administration, I got a really plum job at a place, you may have heard about it in the press recently, and it's the Powerhouse Museum. So I got a manager role there. I was overseeing all of the commercial areas within the museum, and we had a wild ride in terms of blockbusters and making commercial returns from those kind of opportunities. That was my business area. I looked after events, memberships, and all of the customer experience areas. And at the end of 2014, a bombshell dropped. And this was just before all of the news of the Powerhouse moving out to Parramatta came to the fore. And what happened was that over a third of the staff were identified as being surplus to requirements. In other words, we were handed letters about being, and I'll say offered in inverted commas, but being offered a fast track out the door. And at that stage, I was 52. And I had had a wee plan in the back of my mind. And just imagine that had been my whole life in the public sector. So I was essentially institutionalized. But I did have this little agenda in the background where I'd gone and done some coaching training at about the 45-year-old point. My question to myself was, well, what will I do when it's time to move beyond here? And the game plan that was when my daughter was in year 12, you know, when she finished school, essentially, then I would take a risk. Now, my daughter is now in year 12. So the universe wasn't quite on the same page as me. But what happened was that in 2014, I had no choice. I was pushed out the window only to find that I did, in fact, have a parachute. But it wasn't a soft landing, I can assure you of that, because I wasn't ready yet to find the person that I really, really was meant to be. I had done my coaching training. I had done some NLP training. And I had started working both as a coach within the museum and also outside of the museum. So I was sort of testing the waters, but I knew that my heart was really being pulled in that direction. I knew that it was seeing people step beyond where they thought they could have gone in their wildest dreams and to find that they could actually go beyond that. And so, look, here I was, that I then did a whole lot of different courses. It was my passion project, and I read everything on personal development that came into the arena. And I thought that, as I say, when my daughter finished school, I would take a risk and I would really, really jump out and see if I could grow a business around my expertise in helping people to go beyond where they thought they would go.
So you know, when after having such a long and really interesting career within the public service, you know, I mean, really, so moving to Sydney and then working in tourism and then being with the Australian Broadcasting Tribunal and helping people to get jobs and then going into the Sydney Visitor Centre and then the Powerhouse Museum. What an amazing trajectory for your career. And having been in the public service for many, many years, now we always think of the public service as being a very stable and secure environment.
Yes.
And so redundancies were not really the norm in that environment. So I'm just curious to find when it actually happened, because of that sense of security you would have felt in, you know, for many, many years, how did you handle that? How did it feel?
Well, it felt surreal, Jane. It was as if there were days when it was as if I was on holidays and it hadn't really happened. And then there were other days of very deep fear. especially when I would apply for jobs. And of course, some you don't even hear back from at all. Others you go and do an interview for. Others you're almost certain you got that. I've nailed it. I would come home to my husband and say, I've nailed that one. Mm. Well, not so much. In fact, not so much at all. So, Jane, one thing I stumbled on in terms of the whole book writing journey is the hero's journey.
Mm.
Joseph Campbell's wonderful book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces, mm-hmm. and many, many YouTube videos that look at that through the Hunger Games or Star Wars or The Wizard of Oz or whatever. So this was a hero's journey. When I look at 6 o'clock at The Hero's Journey, that's when Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker are facing off. And Luke is recognizing not only that Darth Vader is his father, but that Darth Vader is actually the shadow version of himself. And in my own case, 6 o'clock was the point where I had already been trying to write a book for 5 years. I had spent over $30,000 on various writing programs and mentoring and retreats. I still didn't have a book to leverage to build my coaching practice. I was going into menopause, my daughter was going into adolescence, and I had been made redundant. So what engulfed me was not only fear in general about how this was all going to pan out, but deep, deep shame, regret, and guilt about having spent that amount of money, that amount of time and effort on writing a book that had not yet materialized. And in that dark space, and we say as coaches, if you can sit in discomfort, as opposed to running off and buying another course, because that was my pattern that had to be broken, and it was broken at 6 o'clock. If you can sit in that discomfort, something quite amazing might emerge in the way of a piece of learning. And for me, the piece of learning came when I asked myself, and I was at the time kind of berating myself, what don't you have? $30,000, 5 years of your life in learning about how to write a book, what don't you have that you need? And what emerged for me has turned into what I've made out of the what I call the Power Writing Program, which is the 5 main barriers to writing a book. And I developed the 5 pillars of the Power Writing Program over how to overcome those barriers. Mm-hmm. And the barriers, should I go into them for the reader or for the reader, of course, the listener in this case, should I go over them or not yet, Jane? Pause for a question.
Yeah, well, actually, what's so interesting is when it comes to writing a book, there are plenty of barriers, aren't there? Mm. I remember in 2014, I spent a year writing my book, Never Written Before, Crossroads.
Yeah. Yes.
And there were plenty of barriers. Half the time I thought, oh, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, who am I to write a book? Then I thought, oh, I want to kill myself because it's all too hard.
Oh.
And then it's like, oh, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And then it's all going to be worth it.
Yes.
You know, what's the reason? You ask yourself so many questions. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have the support of my author mentor at the time to help me through all of those challenges,
yes,
I wouldn't have got through to the 30,000, 60,000, 70,000 words, of which 30,000 were cut by my editor in the end. But you have to have support, don't you?
Yes, yes. Yeah? It's very, very helpful.
Yeah, because you have, now let me just have a look here, Jane. You've written, okay, Thrive in Midlife.
Yes.
Okay, which is obviously a very defining book, okay. You have written Weight Loss in Midlife. Again,
yes.
I'm struggling with that at the moment. And then Mindset for Authors, How to Get Out of Procrastination, Perfectionism and Self-Doubt. Now, how familiar does that sound?
Oh, indeed, indeed.
When it comes to writing a book.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Okay, so tell me, when it comes to writing a book, give me your top 3 tips for success.
Okay, my 3 tips for success. Firstly, get out of your own head and into the head of your reader.
Mm.
Really understand your reader, understand their problem, and have empathy for that. And empathy is an incredible tool that will motivate us from our heart because it's that place where we make decisions. It's not our head. Empathy with our potential reader is what acts as a highly motivating factor in the whole scenario. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is be kind to yourself. Be aware that any of those stories that go on in your head are stories. Tap into them. They are important because it is your vulnerability that is going to connect better than anything else with your reader. And then the last one is get yourself the best editor that you can afford. The best editor. And if you are not making progress in the way that you would like, then certainly sooner rather than later, enlist the help of somebody who's gone before you. It might be me, it might be somebody else just like me, but you want somebody who wants to catch you before you fall into the hole that might cost you months or, you know, in my own case, years. You want somebody who sees it coming and knows how to stop it and who will keep you accountable. Now, one of my favourites, Simon Sinek, was on the project recently, and he was asked, how do you do everything you do and continue to write books? And he said, well, I have my babysitter. I book in for her. She comes in, she sits with me. She sits with me and makes sure that I write. Now, in my own case,
we need that.
We need that in some shape or other. I take my authors into the State Library of New South Wales. We have beautiful rooms downstairs that we use, and at least monthly, they're connecting with their small tribe. I have small groups at any one time with a small tribe and with me. And I really put my hand on my heart when I say this, and they say to me, we want to make you proud. Now, I didn't see that in advance. I thought that they wouldn't want me to say, oh, what, you haven't done it yet? It's not that. It's the, oh, that's fantastic. It's the way I light up. Because I'm having fun now. This is the benefit. I'm so grateful I was made redundant because I get to have fun and I get to actually light up. I get to be alive, Jane.
You know what's so good is, you know, people find redundancy. Initially they think, oh no, this is a bad thing that's happened. But you know what? For so many of my clients, it's a blessing in disguise.
Yes.
Because so often they discover the person that they were supposed to be. And it sounds like, Jane, you've discovered the person you're supposed to be as an author mentor because your passion comes through so very, very strongly. And so now you're guiding people through how to write a book, how to overcome the procrastination, how to structure your book. So
absolutely. Oh, yes.
Well, and the entire process, A to Z, of how to write a book and get it published.
Yes, I publish their book and I show them how to get publicity and how to build a business around it. So everything, my hero's journey then of establishing a business is everything that I can share with my people as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because, you know, so many people, I mean, everyone says, I think I've got a book in me. And everyone does have a book in them.
At least one.
It's just that they don't put pen to paper or finger to typewriter or finger to keyboard and get all those thoughts in their head down on paper, basically. So I would think, I know I kept saying to myself when I would try and procrastinate, it was like, why am I doing this in the first place? What's my mission? And Jane, just do it. You know, don't make up excuses, just do it. But I couldn't have done it without the people around me who kept me accountable. And it sounds like you in your business now, helping budding authors, you keep them accountable.
Well, people often ask me, though, well, why? So the book Thrive in Midlife, that was really because my intention was to help women through the, at times, difficult terrain that I was in myself. So the idea was that I would write a book about a wellness program that I was putting myself through. But, and people say, well, how did you move from that to now helping people to write their books? And there were a couple of actually really cathartic moments for me. One of them had to do with, and this had a lot to do with the why the 5 years, or at least why the extended period of not being ready, not being able to actually do what you needed to do to get the book written. And that was about an agenda that I had playing in the background that I was semi-conscious of. And that agenda was that I thought, okay, I'm going to put myself in a corner here. I'm going to force myself, if you like, to treat myself well in terms of stress, in terms of mindset, what I'm eating, how much sleep I'm getting, what sort of exercise I'm doing. And I thought that, yes, I'll be able to tell people how much better they feel and what kind of challenges they might have, and that I would be able to come out the other end and say that I managed to cure myself of a 40-year history of binge eating disorder. Now, the closer I got to the deadline for my editor, the worse my binging got, not better. And one of those other moments that bubbled up in me was a voice that didn't just say, "You stupid idiot, you've just used, you know, 6 weeks here of an experiment. You haven't stuck to the rules in terms of the food." But that wasn't what my voice was saying. My voice was saying, what if that's not the point? What if the point is to be able to stand up as a proud woman and say, as a matter of self-care, I'm able to actually love myself, whether I have a dysfunctional relationship around food or not. And if I practice some self-love, I may be able to untangle some of these relationships and some of the neural networks that I've built up over 40 years. And Jane, the really important thing for me was when I was standing on the stage at Glee Books and launching my book, when I was able to look at my 14-year-old daughter and her friends and say, what I want you girls to hear is that there is nothing so shameful and so unspeakable about you that you can't tell someone about it and know that they will still love you and they will remind you to love yourself.
Very powerful words.
In that moment, Jane, because it wasn't only the 14-year-old girls out there, it was the 14-year-old girl in here that needed to hear that as well. And in that moment, I got it. I got the incredible power of stepping into our story and owning it all. And from that point forward, my mission in the world is to change the world one book at a time. And as I'm seeing my authors come through the program, just transformed through their own hero's journey, it reinforces for me every time that it may have taken me a while to get to the point where I get why I've been put on this earth. And that's really quite something. And I'm happy to be modelling that for my daughter, not the person who's safely ensconced in the public service, because it's easy.
Yeah, and that's so important. And finding yourself, and sometimes, I mean, you find yourself through adversity, which sounds like you went through a challenging time, and then it's like, how do I reinvent myself? And you found who you were supposed to be. It makes such a difference. And as a consequence, you've become such an inspiration to your daughters as well. And I'm sure that a lot of my listeners would love to know where they could find you. I would love to talk to you all day. I've got a series of podcast interviews.
Yes, you do, Jane. Well, look,
I've got another one in about 3 minutes.
Lovely. Well, people can find me at writewithjane.com.
writewithjane.com. Easy. And also your Twitter handle is wellness coach and the number 2.
Yes.
And so what I'm going to do is I'll have your links in my show notes in
janecoach.com
so that people can read through the show notes, find out more about you, Jane, and also your business
at
Write with Jane. What a good name. and then they can reach out to you and find out more about what you do too, because I'm sure there are lots of budding authors out there who'd love to find out more about how you did it. So all that remains is thank you so much for your time. It's a really inspirational story and just wonderful to hear how much passion you have for what you do too.
Thank you, Jane. It's been my pleasure.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Great.
Take care. If you enjoyed this podcast, look for Your Career Podcast on iTunes and leave a review. And for all the career management support you need to create your dream career, visit janejacksoncoach.com and join my Careers Academy for live career webinars, group coaching, one-on-one coaching support, as well as my online career development courses. Isn't it time you found your dream job?
You've been listening to Jane Jackson Careers. Sign up to receive regular career advice at janejacksoncoach.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my career success program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.